If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Good Tuesday after. Hey, look at that. It's raining outside again. It must be, well, now it's May in Chicago, but the rain is relentless. And so is United and Apple earnings, I guess, a little bit relentless. They're coming out later today. John Najarian is on the phone line. You see him on CNBC and also follow him at John Najarian on Twitter. He joins us every Tuesday or so to talk about what's going on Wall Street. And, well, this is a Tuesday. John, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Great to be here with you.
I see the NASDAQ hit an intraday high again today. Is that fueled by Apple?
Indeed it is. Not only Apple, but Apple provides a pretty significant boost to any of the indices that it's included in, which amount to just about any of the ones you'd be talking about on your show. So, yes, Apple is driving pretty hard the S&P 500, NASDAQ, Dow, and I think it'll have a good earnings report tonight. But right now they are pricing much less in the way of how much the stock will move after the earnings, and that's kind of interesting. In other words, they're saying this is they're either very complacent or they're not thinking this is going to be much of a move out of Apple.
All right, so we'll watch for that, as you said, coming up after the bell or before the bell today. We heard from the automakers, right? And the news for sales last month wasn't so good.
No, pretty bad. Peak auto is, you know, being tossed around again as a term that people are embracing, that are short or looking for the stock to go down. I don't know that it needs to go down very much further, but clearly after General Motors last week, I think, might have traded up over 35, perhaps even pushing to 36. It's made a somewhat dramatic turn back down here to 33.25, and nobody in the industry outside of Tesla looks that strong right now.
Well, Ford sales reported, what, down 4%, Toyota down 4.4, and Chrysler dropped more than 5% today after sales were down 7%. So, I mean, the auto industry has been doing well, right? Is this just sort of a blip?
I think it is. I think that they will be right back, but I don't know that any of these are great stocks for us to own. Very seldom do we see big institutions doing anything more than holding these big stocks, mainly for those big dividends. GM, that dividend's up over 4.6% right now. You slide on over to Ford, and you're over at 5.5%. So they're seemingly luring investors in with those big, attractive dividend yields, Steve, but it doesn't seem like where somebody like me, who doesn't just look at the dividend right, yields but looks at the stock performance, I can see that 5% wiped out pretty quick from a down move like you're seeing it wiped out today.
So but would they be more attractive to a guy like me who's going to buy a stock and then sit on it for 10 years?
In particular, if you're going to buy it on a dip like today, yes. So I think you're being a smart investor looking at it that way. Chasing those stocks with the minuscule performance they've had over the past several years since they recovered off that, you know, bankruptcy filings and so forth back in 08 and 09, I think owning them on dips like this for those big dividend yields is okay. Chasing them on any kind of good news, I think, is a fool's errand.
All right, so one of the reasons I like talking to you is because when you come on around noon, it's just after usually CNBC or a guest on CNBC has moved the market from time to time. It happened with on the halftime report that you are on, and it happened earlier today. Mark Cuban was on CNBC talking about how he's going to buy Twitter, and then Twitter exploded on the market.
Yeah, and it wasn't so much a forward-looking statement. He already had bought Twitter, and he's not buying the company. He's buying shares, just like you and I.
It's funny you say that. Yes, because I saw the headline on TV. I'm like, wow, Cuban's buying Twitter.
Yeah, and Cuban is a wild guy, but he's not crazy. And I think, you know, as most people that watch him on Shark Tank have learned through the years, he is a guy that wants to see some, not just revenue, but profits. And that's something Twitter has very little of. In fact, their revenue fell 11% this last quarter. I know he bought it. He mentioned that he bought a couple other fallen tech angels or stocks that hadn't done well lately, and one of them was GoPro, and he said, I had to take a big loss in there. But obviously this gain, he says he bought several million shares of Twitter, and today the market's nearly $2 higher than where it was last week when he was buying those shares. So this is a very good trade for him, but I think it's a trade, not an investment.
All right, let's go down to Washington now. We're members of the House Transportation Committee. We're all puffy-chested with the CEO of Oscar Munoz before them, and they were beating him up over United Airlines' handling of that passenger last month at O'Hare. I always like watching the members of Congress when they are so self-righteous as they were today. But, you know, Munoz said what you would expect him to say. He says he thinks about this every day, tries to figure out how they got in this situation. When it comes to the stock, you know, it got hit early on, but how has it reacted or how has it recovered from that day in April?
Well, 100%. Yeah. It's higher. It's higher than when that day in April hit. I know you already knew that answer before you asked it, but United Continental Holdings is now trading almost $73 a share. It's at the highs of the day, up 3.5% today. And if you pushed back to that day in April when they had that disastrous issue, the stock had closed at basically 70, and it traded down in the after hours to maybe 68.5. So we have come way back since then. And as bad as this was, and I'm sure they said, my policy, take it, as far as their insurance for the sort of calamity that resulted in having Dr. Dow dragged off the plane. I think also the fact that Warren Buffett owns a big chunk right. of airlines, this one in particular, and he's not a seller. I will bet you money, Stephen, he was a buyer on the dip. That's what I said 2 weeks ago on Fast Money. And now the stock's almost $5 higher than when we talked about it.
Hey, real quick, I want to ask you, President mm-hmm. Trump tweeted out earlier today, you know, they've agreed on a budget extension to September. I think it's debt ceiling, isn't it? Until September, they're going to have to readdress it. And he tweeted out today that we need more Republican senators, or we need to change the rules to make it easier to approve spending. And then he says, you know, this country maybe needs a good shutdown in September to fix this mess. And I ask you about it because, you know, in a typical presidency, you would have the president predicting maybe or hoping for a shutdown, which would be sort of calamitous. I don't know if there's any reaction on Wall Street today, and I just wonder if that shows that people have learned not to react or overreact to what the president says.
I think it's a little of that, and I'll even posit the following. I think everything President Trump does is a negotiation. Everything. So when he last week talked about NAFTA and he said, I might have us pull out of NAFTA, we reported it on CNBC. That's when I bought puts on a bunch of the auto stocks because I thought, wow, these could get hit pretty quick. He ended up getting a call from Justin Trudeau and from the head of Mexico, and they said, let's negotiate. Let's not dump it. He also got calls from a lot of U.S. corporations. In other words, I think he brings people to the bargaining table with him by these somewhat ludicrous
right, okay.
tweets.
So there's not.
And I think that's what it's about.
They're less nutty than they are sort of crafty.
Yes. Okay. I think it's a way of him bringing people to the bargaining table.
I'm way behind, John. Real quick, do you have
No,
I did it to myself. But do you have a tip for us today?
I still like Home Depot. We bought it a little over a week ago. Even though the stock has run, I like what they're doing, and I think the housing shortage means more of us are going to have to stay and enjoy our present homes and fix them up at Home Depot, and HD is a stock we added to last week.
John, great to talk to you again. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is in the studio and from DNA Info, and well, he makes the song requests as well via Twitter. Thank you for that. I saw your tweet.
Awesome.
Suggested a little Allman Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Eat a peach.
Yeah. And so I love this story. So Andrew comes in, talks about openings and closings, and you can read these stories at dnainfo.com and a lot of other ones too. I was reading the story. I think you guys alone had it, or a nice jump on the fire, the analysis of house fires in Chicago.
Yeah, right. And so we have a map, and it plots what neighborhoods are the most dangerous for fires, and maybe it's not too big of a surprise, but poor neighborhoods have a lot of fires.
Some neighborhoods in Englewood, four times as likely as the Gold Coast to have a house fire.
Right, and whether that's because they aren't well maintained, or they don't have
smoke
fire
detectors,
alarms.
Yeah.
And yes.
Okay, right. That's not why you're here, though.
No.
But that's one of the good stories you can read at DNA Info.
Yeah.
We talk about openings and closings, and I want to talk about this restaurant. It's called Reclaimed, mm-hmm.
right?
Just opened up in North Center. What a story there is here.
Yeah, so this is at 3655 Northwestern. It's they serve southern food like buttermilk chicken and scallops and grits, and it all sounds delicious. But one of their big things is music, and their sort of motto is FMB, which stands for Food, Music, and Booze. And so in addition to this delicious food, they are also going to concentrate on music while you eat, and to the point where they've hired a music director. He's a former record store owner, and they've told him to go out and buy some vinyl and get prepared for these food music pairings that they're going to.
So one of the first things they did was buy a turntable and a stereo system. Right,
right.
Okay, so tell the story about this guy.
Uh-huh.
And how he finds his way not just to Chicago but to this restaurant.
Oh, right. So he's living in Memphis, I think, and he's thinking about moving to Chicago. He reaches out to one guy that he knows in Chicago.
He knows one guy.
Who he knew from the Navy from years ago. And that guy knows another guy, and eventually the new music director, Phil Petriani,
yeah.
Ends up with this great job at Reclaimed. And so he says, I'm going to play entire albums or half albums, no singles. And he and the chef are going to get together and come up with some special pairings of food, drinks, and album sides for special
and
nights.
This is just a joint, right? I mean, it's a little above tavern food, but it's just
yeah.
They said there weren't many neighborhood places.
Right.
So they've opened up this one, Reclaimed.
Yeah, so they're open, I guess, to ideas. And I was thinking eat a peach.
Right.
Peach pie.
And
go
there
for
you
that.
Are. And the Allman Brothers come to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank
right.
you very much for that. All right. My day is made either in the beginning of the day as a good day or a bad day by whether or not the fire trucks are pulling out of the River North Fire Station as I drive to work.
Oh, is that right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
You drive right by there.
I drive right by this station, and it adds 10 minutes to my drive.
55 West Illinois Street. Well, you might be seeing some changes there. There is a developer, Friedman Properties, and they have their eye on this property where Fire Station Company number 42 is currently at, and they have a plan to build a tower, a retail and residential and office tower.
Nice,
there.
Nice location, nice piece of real estate.
Very good. And what they've offered the city is they will build a new fire station on the first floor of this tower, and so. Basically, what they're saying is, if you let us build this tower here, we'll give you a $20 million fire station.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
And good for the city. Why not?
Right. And so they'll also pay for the property. So that's kind of a new sort of thing. But there's also another situation similar to that happening in the West Loop, where another developer, Sterling Bay, is rehabbing an old building right near the old Oprah Winfrey Studios and what will be McDonald's headquarters. And they are rehabbing this building. They're going to give that to the city for use as a library.
That's great.
Public library.
And so two big buildings, big projects that will help the city out.
Right.
What exactly have you ever given the city?
Plenty of taxes, random red light camera tickets. I don't want to go into that.
So you've helped. You have helped.
I have helped for many years.
Andrew
yes.
Herman from DNA Info Chicago. Thanks for coming by.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGNR. A little later in the program, Philip Weiss will be in. He's the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work, a cool company. And what they do is they advise other companies about how to handle issues, of whether it's personnel or what. And so Oscar Munoz was on Capitol Hill today. They had a bit of a customer service issue at United. And so we thought that we'd take that opportunity to talk about what Philip's advice is for other companies. But the giggle you heard was Suzanne Muchens, co-host of The Big Payoff at WGNRadio.com and a lot of other stuff. Welcome back.
Thank you. You're funny.
I don't think we've been in the same studio in 6 weeks.
Ages. Too long.
You don't think enough of the show to show up.
Exactly. I've been phoning it in.
Yeah. Oh, you've been
exactly.
filling it too, haven't you? How did that go?
Oh, I filled in. Yeah. You know, the people have spoken. I think they really prefer me.
Well, I'm the one who's back, so I don't know what that means. All right, so every Monday night, uh-huh. Suzanne sends me an email of the things that she'd like to talk about. And one of the things that I received last night was this Met Gala.
I don't know why you're making me laugh so much this morning. It's this beautiful, you're so smart and so worldly. And every now and then we find this little tiny pin dot of an absence of knowledge usually it's like fashion or entertainment.
I'm assuming the Met Gala is a fundraiser for the Metropolitan Opera, right?
Okay, no.
It's not really. I thought it was.
Are you being serious?
No, like yeah.
Really.
I don't know what a Met Gala.
Okay,
all I know
is it's the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Oh, the okay.
And every year they.
I had the wrong Met. Okay.
Well, I'm so troubled. There's so many
so
layers of being troubled.
So that explains why people dress so oddly, because it's art.
It's art, and they have a whole wing devoted to fashion.
Okay. I didn't know. It's making more sense to me now, because I couldn't figure out why people were dressing, because it's bizarrely for a fundraiser for an opera. But now I get it. It's art.
See, what would you do without me? I feel like I bring this whole other dimension.
I'm glad you feel that way, but I could have gotten by without knowing.
Without it.
Yeah, I could have.
So it's a big deal. Uh-huh. And Anna Wintour is always the host of it. And, you know, 300, five, oh, no, you don't
I
know
had
who
no
that
idea.
Is?
No.
Oh, do you know who she is?
No, I don't.
Oh, the editor of Vogue?
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, okay.
With the big glasses.
Right,
the bob.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Okay.
She does the commercials for what's that clothing store?
I don't know that she
Old
does.
Navy. Is she in the Old Navy yet? No, I'm
no.
kidding. That was
okay,
not her.
Steve, okay. I don't even know where to go with all of this.
Okay, back on
like,
track. So
okay,
I'm sorry.
Let me just say, I'm glad I'm here. I really am.
Okay.
Okay. So they do this huge event, 300 to 500 celebrities who, to your point, dress wildly. This is like the Oscar of fashion, and there's typically a theme. And some people dress with themes, some don't. But I think what's interesting about this event is what goes on behind the scenes.
In what way?
Because if you think about it, planning this event for this caliber of guest, and then Anna Wintour, who's known, you know, for this is, you know, like the Devil Wears Prada.
Right.
The level of detail. So this great article came out, and it featured this woman whose name is Silvana Durrett, who has been planning this event for 8 years. And she's young. I mean, she can't be more than 30-something.
Wait, she's been planning this year's event for 8 years?
The Met Gala.
Okay.
For the last eight years.
I see.
Years.
Okay.
So you just imagine the level of detail and scrutiny and the high stakes of something going wrong. So she wrote this article, and I just want to talk about two things she
sure.
said. These are lessons learned from planning this kind of an event. The first thing she said is, you have to know what to delegate, and it's not what you think. So most people think, if I don't know how to do it, I should delegate it. That's not my sweet spot. You delegate
right,
it.
Right, right, right.
Her point of view is, no, you delegate that which you already know and keep that which you don't so that you learn it and so that it becomes something that you can actually have an opinion about. And you delegate all the stuff you've been doing before. Interesting.
Right.
Right.
So the idea is that you can then delegate that and still oversee it in a way because you know how it should be going.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that was one thing. And the other thing is to assume something is going to go wrong.
Right.
Just
right.
know.
That's how I live my life. It's how I get out of bed.
You just assume it. And so that way, I think it puts things into perspective because you have to know that everybody knows. But more importantly, there's always a plan B
you
for
know what?
Everything.
It's a great point because then if you just realize the fact that it's not going to go according to plan, it's like, so then when it doesn't, it's like, okay.
Exactly.
In a way, it's going according to plan.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought her article was really interesting and mostly gives a peek at an event that most people just see the red carpet.
Yeah.
I
did not know. I really thought it was for the opera.
I feel like there's just this beautiful thing that happens when I bring something new to your world.
I leave smarter. Uh-huh. Actually, you leave. I stay here, but I stay smarter. Okay, so Michelle Obama is cashing in, baby. $60 million, she and her husband, for a book.
$200K for speaking.
Right. And this just exposes her for the fraud that she is.
You're saying that just to egg me on.
I have no problem with this.
I said to Steve that I think that she's taking a brand hit. Yeah, she was always above it all. I think we love to think about Michelle Obama as somebody who was not in that thing, not in it for the money, not in it for the,
she was a very successful executive right before she went off to Washington.
Correct. But what motivated her? I think the people like to think that she has the purest of intentions always. And what this is exposing is, if you really wanted to just tell your story, do you really have to be, you know, do you have to make $200K every time you do it? Great that you have a book deal. $60 million? It's a lot of money.
Well, would you have her say, you know, I'll do it for a couple? I mean, if the market's going to give her $60 million?
I think it's about what her big picture plan is as a messenger. Clearly, she's not going to run for office. I don't think it's about that. But it's about, look, she's still young, very influential. Who does she want to influence, and what do those people care about? And to be taking any kind of hit around, oh, look at her, now she's become one of them, taking the money. Why does she need to do that?
Well, I think it matters more about what she says than how much she's paid to say it. I mean, if she were to go to... I don't know, some mega food, you know, corporation and say, yeah, make your milk as cheaply as you can.
Yeah.
You know, that's a brand hit, because then she's speaking contrary to her expressed values. If she's being paid $200,000 to go to Wall Street and speak about the value of organic food in schools, I don't think that hurts her. I don't know. I doubt that's what she's going to talk about.
I doubt that's what she's talking about. I think that there's a bigger question in play here, which is, what are the Obamas want now? What are they going to do with the foundation? Where do they want to go in terms of still being active players? And does this help them get there? Because money's money. I'm not saying they don't have a right to make it.
Sure.
But there is a point at which the money gets in the way of your message.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to agree with that one. I think if they were right now, but I see you sitting there. But I think if they were, you know, like I said, if they were making the money by contradicting themselves or speaking against what they've stood for in the past, I think that might be an issue. But
yeah. Would be worse. That's for
they're,
sure.
They're going to be in town tomorrow, so maybe we'll have them on.
Yeah.
And,
I'm sure.
You know, actually, the show's booked, so I don't think we will be able to have them on. But it's good to see you. Thanks for coming back
in. Yeah, I'm glad to see you.
Will you be back again next week, or is it going to be like 6 weeks again?
You know how I phone it in. It's like at the last minute I decide.
So listen to Suzanne and the Big Payoff at WGNRadio.com, elsewhere as well.
Anywhere you can listen to a podcast, you can listen to The Big Payoff. Really, career advice for women.
All right. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1252 on this Tuesday afternoon. Philip Weiss is in the studio. He is the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work, and comes by from time to time to talk about the advice they give to companies around the world. Philip, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good to see you.
Tell me, let's just back up and tell me what Seyfarth Shaw at Work does.
What we do is a great deal of training. But our primary focus is to take the law, legal trends, legal news, and turn it into simple, user-friendly lessons, just like you said, strategies for companies
and
the public.
So you're kind of a heads-up for companies so that they can avoid problems before...
That's right. I mean, or if they see a problem, not be the next problem.
Right. And so one of the best conversations, or the most memorable I had with you, and I'm sure we'll talk about it again, is companies in preparing for ADA complaints. That's the sort of thing you say, you know, you have to have a strategy, be ready to go.
Right, because that's a great example of something that doesn't happen every day. The risks, the challenges, but you have to have a strategy.
You've got to be ready
day.
For it.
Right.
All right, so Oscar Munoz was on Capitol Hill today, and we all know the United story and the terrible customer service situation there. So did your phone start ringing after that United story broke?
Well, it's interesting. We've had a lot of calls now going back several months, and I think part of it is the social media piece. Companies realize that when something goes wrong, the cameras are going to turn on. And it's interesting, Steve, because the backstory, you never see. What happened before people are alerted to that moment of tension,
right.
We don't know about.
The lead up.
That's right.
You never wear the lead up.
That's right.
So when you're collecting these stories and preparing, come on, you gave me your notes a story about, tell me the meatball story.
Yeah, the meatball story. That's one of our favorites.
Now
that a client lets us tell the story, it's become one of our favorites.
This is one of your clients.
Yeah, it's a client that came to us because of the issue.
Because of the meatball.
We try not to create the problems. Right. We try to resolve them.
So this is how a meatball brought you a client.
That's right. And it can be anything. In this case, it is a meatball. And in fact, it's interesting because it's indicative, Steve, of one of these three big areas of risk when it comes to customer service. This is sort of the wrong fix, the wrong solution. In this case, a restaurant in Southern Illinois, a really well-known sandwich spot in the area. Their pièce de résistance, their number one dish, was the meatball hoagie. People would come from across the county, including one gentleman who came weekly. he showed up once. They were out of the meatball hoagie. I think they had sold out to a sports team that had come
They're that good.
They're that good. And they saw how disappointed this customer was, this regular customer. And in an effort to please the customer, they offered him the half-eaten remainder of a sandwich. It was a full half. They claimed it was untouched. They would give him extra hoagie sauce, extra fries, whatever would buttress the dish. And he was so upset at the fact that they would give him half a sandwich this became the talk of the town. In fact, it became a running joke among the community members, like, who's going to get the rest of my sandwich?
Right, right.
Or am I the first person to eat the sandwich? And it took a while for the company to rebound from that word of mouth issue.
And so your advice to a company like that would be, I mean, it's all about, like everything else we just said, it's preparation, right? It's being ready for the half a hoagie day.
That's right. The half a hoagie day. We're going to rename the story now that we have a better title. Thanks to you. Really what this is about, Steve, it's about understanding that if something goes wrong, you need a pre-planned protocol. If someone doesn't get the service or the hoagie or the hotel room or the restaurant table, what are you going to do to make up for it in the moment, but is not so creative that it's almost too creative and therefore a little creepy, like a half a sandwich?
We were talking just with Suzanne Muchin in the last segment about the person who puts together the Met Gala. And one of the things she said she learned was to expect that something will go wrong. And that's kind of where we are. You even advocate that businesses budget for making up with angry consumers.
Right. You don't want to plan to make mistakes as if you want to make mistakes, but you want to plan for the inevitable. We actually have a dry cleaning company that we work with now. They have their own sort of comp system. They call it cash plus coupon.
Right.
Cash plus coupon. If somebody's shirt is late or dress is late from the in terms of the deadline, they'll refund the money if you've paid it, or they'll make it gratis, and then they'll give you a coupon, Steve, for your next visit at 50% off.
Already policy.
That's right, because the cost to them over a year is so little compared to the loyalty dividend.
Okay, let's go to, in the time we have left, someone's complaining at a table or at a counter, and one of the things that you suggest, which makes a lot of sense, is first of all, have a point person who's in charge or who is the go-to person for these complaints, but also don't send her or him to the complainer alone.
Right.
Send them in pairs.
Right.
Explain that for me.
Well, those are two very good questions you're connecting. Number one, you want a point person because that person will hopefully be trained to use language that you've deemed appropriate. You know, even hopefully role play that with some of your better customers who are willing to kind of test out the language.
So serve them a half a hoagie and see how it goes.
That's right. You'll know how that goes quickly.
Right.
Knows what to offer so that you've got a system that's reasonable, doesn't involve admitting some horrible fault or harm, but shows how much we care. So that's the idea of a point person. The coming in pairs is really about safety. We've got clients that actually will preload the local law enforcement number in their phone. And the second person, the wingman or woman, is there not only to show that this is a one-voice approach, but can go back for help or reach out for help.
Philip Weiss is the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work. Where do people find more information about you guys?
You can Google Seyfarth, Seyfarth, at Work, and come right to our site.
Nice to see you again. Come back again soon.
Thanks a lot.